gold masses and some carnations. And such a beautiful bouquet. I was just thrilled to death. And now I'll tell you some more about...
Did you eat much?
No, I had turkey and ham and oh my, of all the things. That's
homemade ice cream.
Yes, homemade ice cream. Grisha's life. Don't you want to say something, Veronica, now? They had no children. Aunt Nora said to my mother, Gertie, you've got six girls. It looks to me like you let me have at least one of them. I chimed in and said, I'll go. So away I went with my big doll and suitcase. My father had this sad, long face, and I knew he hated for me to go, but he didn't want to say anything. He knew it would be nice for me to be with my mother's people, and then also I would get to go to school where the religious nuns taught. But I soon discovered that he knew I would get homesick at the tender age of 10 and a half. I was off on the train with my Aunt Nora and Uncle Bernard Cavanaugh. We stopped in Kansas City to visit with Mama and Aunt Nora's sister, Anna Laura Bell. She was a secretary for some firm there in the city. She was the youngest of the Bell sisters. There were seven of them. And she was beautiful. She never married. Later on, when Aunt Lydia and her husband, Uncle Johnny McAndrew, left the old home place to have a farm of their own, Anna came back home to be with her parents, still on the farm. Aunt Nora, Uncle Bernard, and I reached St. Paul, Kansas, in plenty of time for me to get started to St. Francis School there in St. Paul. This was my mother's old hometown. So here I am starting to a different school again. I had gone to two different schools in North Dakota. One was named the Valley School, and it was northwest from us, and the other was northeast, but I can't remember the name of it. Then I had gone to school at North Fork, where my father had gone, then to Wright. Now this was school number 5. The next year, I was back to Wright School again. To remain until my high school days, where I went to Holy Rosary in Monroe City, Missouri. Back to being at Aunt Nora and Uncle Bernard's when I was a little girl. They sure did do a lot of nice things for me. I enjoyed my stay, even if I was silently very homesick. I sure didn't like being an only child. It seemed to me that 4 big eyes were upon me. I had to render an account of everything every time I stepped out of the yard, and I felt fenced in after a life of wiles on the country and enough other kids around that my parents couldn't have special time with me as their time had to be divided. Therefore, I could be at the farm in the barn with the horses, or in the woods swinging on a grapevine, and but I'm sure we told our mother when we left the farm, or if we went to the creek to swim. Crooked Creek surrounded the farm on the south, so it was quite a change to be confined to a house in the yard. But a lot of weekends I got to go to Grandpa Bell's farm to visit my mother's, and to visit my mother's brother, Emery Bell, and his wife, Nellie, and their many children. My little bedroom at Aunt Nora's was upstairs, where I slept all by myself. Lonely nights, but I did learn a lot of prayers, maybe because the nuns required it, and also because I was lonely. Christmas of 1912 came, and I was far from home, and all excitement, but Aunt Nora tried to make a nice Christmas for me. She sewed and made my big doll a whole new outfit, and she was sitting in a new doll buggy. I had hung up my stocking by the fireplace, but I can't remember any Christmas tree, which we always had at home. Oh, yeah, I just dropped in to make that pass.
It's on, ready, going.
I have a postcard in my hand that my mother sent me on January 25th, 1913. It was addressed Miss Frances Charbo, St. Paul, Kansas. She says, she had a postmark, January 24th. Dear Frances, I hope you are well and doing good in school. We are all well, but the roads are bad. Lillian is so cute and good, Mama. That was all it was on the card. It was a Thanksgiving card that I got in January, but those days they did with whatever they had on hand. Cards hadn't been in use very long, and it was sure a treat to get one, and they were surely treasured. I have a collection of several dozen from the time we lived in North Dakota on through the years. I also have old letters that I wrote to my folks and they wrote to me while I was away. Uncle Bernard was, he was so glad to have me there, and he had, he played lots of games with me. I would sit on his lap, and when he'd get tired of me, he'd spread his legs apart and let me fall through. Aunt Nora seemed to be jealous sometimes because she likes that on his lap too. That was her only baby, and she'd call him all kind of baby names. And like for Angel, she'd call him Wangel. I wish that my Wangel would come home to me. And she had all kind of baby talk, which I got kind of disgusted with. And then Uncle Bernard would give me a penny and let me go uptown to get some corn candy, and they'd put about two cups full in for a penny. And then they'd take me with them on nice little trips. Uncle Bernard had a brother who was Dr. Cavanaugh in Fort Scott. They had a little folding stool they'd put it up on, in the seat between them, and I'd sit on this little stool up kind of high. Aunt Nora felt it was her duty to be strict with me. She wanted me to stay well, too, so if she'd think I was a little bit sick, she'd put a tablespoon of castor oil in a cup of orange juice. I hated that. I hated orange juice for years. After that, I could even thought it always smelled like castor oil. Finally, I got home in May or June of 1913. I was so glad to see all of them, and especially to see Lillian. She'd grown so much. Well, after I announced that I'd already gotten home, I thought about something about Uncle Bernard. He was pure blood Irish, and he was full of fun. Anyway, he was always telling me stories. But if he didn't have time to tell a story, he had a little trick there where he could get rid of me. And he would, he started in one day, he told me this story about the locust that came and got a grain of corn. And then it just went on and on. Then another locust came, got another green corn. And after he'd had about 10 locusts, well, then I began to get suspicious. And after that, well, then I knew then. Whenever I'd ask him to tell me a story, and he'd start out on this locust, came and got a green corn, I was ready to leave then, because I knew that was the story that meant that he didn't have time to tell me, so he'd get rid of me. The way he had getting rid of him.
When
I went back, I'll tell you all about the time. I stayed at home for several years, but I'll have to hunt up some old letters and things so I can find out when I went back the second time. Aunt Nora had written, wanted to know if I wanted to come back. This was several years afterwards. And I wrote to her and told her I would, but I had decided I'd take Della. Della wasn't school age. But I had decided that I would go. The reason I decided to go was because I had decided to take Della. And my mother didn't say she wasn't going to let Della go. She let me go ahead. And I was quite busy. We had an old trunk, and I put a ham in there and a pumpkin and packed her clothes and put in there. And then she told me she wasn't going to let Della go. She didn't have any intention to let Della go. But I was already in a trap then. I'd already told Aunt Nora I'd come. But I was older by then, and it wasn't quite so bad for me to be away from home. But then
when you come back home, she wrote and said you'd homesick.
Oh yeah. Well, the first time that time then, after I'd been there the second time, Uncle Bernard, after he left the farm, then he went into real estate, and so he had a trip to make out to Utah, I think it was, or someplace in the West, and then Nora was like to go with him when he went very far. And so she wrote my mother, and I still have that letter, she wrote my mother that I was homesick, and it was, the main part of school was already over. From there on, they'd just be mostly entertainment, and she thought, since the country school at home was out, why, I just want to come on home then, since I was homesick. And I read that letter after I got home and found that she had written Mother that I was homesick and wanted to come home, and I was so mad at her because I didn't say in there I was homesick all the time, but of course she could sense that, but I didn't tell her I was homesick. So I did come on home a little early than did the other time. The first time when I went, I was there from August to May or June, but I came home maybe the last of April, the second time. And but I've got the they teased me about it.
Start talking.
What?
Start talking.
Let me start talking? Yeah, I've already said everything.
Surely
not. What to say.
Ask her how to make homebrew.
How'd you say you make homebrew?
Oh, I didn't make homebrew. My husband made it. No, I made root beer, but he made homebrew. But he'd always have a friend or two, you know, they'd down there helping do it.
I think it takes two people. I got my friend lined up.
Oh, yeah.
John.
Yeah.
Got a great big glass. It's a 5 gallon glass jug. The water, the place itself, bottled water. It wasn't cheap. It was $15. He said, well, he'd sell it to us for $7.50 if we could give him half the first batch. He could have done that, but he may not like the first batch.
Well, that's just hard luck. He didn't like
yeah.
it. Well, one time I went in the store, or took you in the grocery store with me to get some yeast and stuff to, you know, to make root beer. And you announced real loud that Mother's going to make some home brew.
And it was against the law then?
For sure. I said, I am not going to make home brew. I'm going to make root beer. But your daddy had been making home brew, and so you had that on your mind.
It was not against the law now.
I don't think it has been for a long time. Couldn't sell it.
Yeah. Well, so it seems to be more fun to make it if it's against the law. Mm-hmm. Ended up that, but I came home about April. You know, I said it's 1913. And then it went on. And then I picked up this, what we did about the home brew. He said, oh, I can't think what anything special happened that since, you know, 1913. Of course, if I got out some of these old letters, you know.
So you came home, or you...
I came home the first time in 1913. I went in 1912. In the summer of 1912, I went home. The spring of 1913. Mama didn't even have a baby that year. She had one in 1911, so. And she didn't have Kathleen until February 1914. And it's heads up back at him and said, I hope you don't put out, I'm not, what you're telling me, or, you know, about my birth.
She gets upset over things.
I know, but she, well, she was so sad because she said, she's so sad about it. Mother had a hard time when she was born. She felt like she had treated her mother terrible, you know, and I wondered if it wasn't her, it was her mother, it was a bowel movement that was causing all the pain and trouble.
She didn't want to know that, though.
No, well, she didn't want me to tell it. Well, Michael, Don's Michael sitting right there, and I sitting right here, and she's here. But she gets up and leaves after he did when I told that.
Yeah, she probably thought, well, Michael was too young.
Well, I said, Michael, you're going to throw up, and I said this, but he didn't look disturbed at all. Of course, he works at stock, you know, and having baby pigs and everything else. So. And he already knew that births were.
How much younger is Josephine than Kathleen?
Oh, well, Kathleen was born February 14, and Josie was born. She's almost 3 years. See, she's born the last of November 1916, which had been 3 years in February. It had been 3 years different than. But Mama used to have them every 2 years, and then she got slowed down there when she had Lillian, between Lillian and Adela. That's, Adela was born in 8. And she wasn't born until 11, you know, in September. That was over 3 years. The last three were, well, starting out with Lillian, Kathleen, Josephine, they were all about 3 years apart. And finally, Josephine born on Thanksgiving Day. And I thought it was something to be thankful for. She was the last one. I figured my mother thought it was something big back over. Mm-hmm. Mm. She talked all the time. Of course, I don't talk to her like she does. I guess she remembered everything under the sun. And especially about anything illness. But she was... She had been a nurse or a doctor, but that was right down her alley, anybody being sick or something about anybody ailing.
Who'd you say?
What?
Who'd you say?
Who'd that say?
Yeah.
I said that out of Jarvis. And I learned an awful lot. I think Mother never said anything about anything anybody ailing. Not like the ganders or take out the hide them by that thing about an this March 9th, this is March 19th, 1984. I recall on this date in 1952 my mother, Gertrude Lee Bell Jarbo, died. Then I recall one of my younger sisters who used to call her parents Papa Dell and Mama Gert. Anyway, maybe I should get back to the story of my life. So because I haven't finished with the births of my parents' daughters, I have two to go. But before I do, I will go back to North Dakota. I had already left North Dakota in my story, but in the meantime I remembered a few things. Close by our homestead there was what was called the Rattlesnake Hill. In season it was alive with the snake. Off seasons we would go up there, not alone, but when we would climb the top, there was two tops with a pathway between, our roadway I should say. Well, when we were on the top, we could see way off to Mandan. It was 20 miles away. It was a railroad center, and we could see the trains switching there. And the atmosphere was so clear that we could sure see a long way. We had some neighbors who lived on the other side of the Rattlesnake Hill. And at one time, our parents took us in the wagon to their home. The folks, I can't remember their names, had children about our age. Anyway, our parents and their parents decided to go berry picking. I guess it was chokecherry. That's the only kind of fruit I can remember. Anyway, they left Bernadette and their oldest son in charge of the younger kids. And Bernadette and their oldest boy decided to herd all the sheep into the house. They opened the door. There was only one door, like ours. And got the sheep to go in. If one sheep goes, all will follow. Then they shut the door. I remember how those sheep jumped from one bed to another and from one table to whatever there was to jump on. They were so frightened, they finally jumped out the window, one at a time. I'm sure that Mr. and Mrs. of the household found a big mess when they got home, but I don't remember any loud screaming. I had told about my parents going to the dances and danced all night during the wintertime months, but I didn't tell of any of the activities during the summer except the thrashing. But families would go to see each other and spend the day, always taking their meal with them, as they never knew whether the folks would be home or not. Quite often they would be a neighbor picnic, and this would be planned ahead of time, and everybody went in the wagon and with all the kids, and everybody's dog would follow the family to the picnic. We wouldn't any more than get there until Bernadette had the dogs into a fight. Oh, how she loved a good dog fight. All the men would come running and separate the dogs. I don't think any of them ever know she started to fight, and I never did tell them. I feared those awful fights from one picnic to the next. Another thing, we'd go to Mandan to the Barnum & Bailey Ringling Brothers Circus. I was so frightened that we'd always cross the tracks, the railroad tracks, and go over to a park to eat our basket dinner. There'd be several families together. I was sure a switching engine would run over us. No one else seemed to have any fear. I'm more than sure that Bernadette didn't. I'll go back to Missouri now, 1914, when Kathleen was born on February the 2nd. This time, we came home from school and found Mother in bed with a new baby girl. I'll never forget how pretty she was. Anyway, I was so pleased with the change of coloring. There was this little bundle with blonde hair and blue eyes and skin like peaches and cream. The first sight of Rosalie, Della, and Lillian was brunette. I decided then and there that she was going to be my baby. And I knew no name was pretty enough for her except Kathleen.
You ever show up?
Shut up. The argument began. Bernadette wanted her name Vivian, and I was worried that I wouldn't win out with my choice, Kathleen. Until the day Papa stood up and said, "Her name is Mildred Kathleen." I didn't know where he got the Mildred, but I was so relieved about the Kathleen. I didn't think anything more about the Mildred. In 1914, I was 12 and Bernadette was 16, and already had a beau. In fact, she had beaus when she was 12. Anyway, she lost her choice of the name, so she paid no attention to my baby and went her way, making sure she stayed looking pretty and have a beau, which wasn't hard for her. She was very entertaining and was always the life of the party. Around home, she could be the sweetest or the meanest, whichever she chose to be. But after she left home, she had an unforgettable devotion to her parents and her sisters. She always remembered us and talked so much about all of us. By the time I was 14, I was still playing paper dolls. It seemed to annoy Bernadette, and she would quite often say, "If I was as long-legged and ugly as you are, I wouldn't be playing paper dolls." She was never long-legged or ugly, and I don't think she ever played with paper dolls or any other kind of dolls. She was busy sewing her clothes or helping Mother sew. Mama became tired of her bossing her about a garment one time she was trying to make, and threw the thing at her and told her from now on she could make her own clothes, or do without. She looked startled, but she knew Mother meant it, so then she was on her own. I enjoyed something new once in a while, but I always loved it when whatever Mama made me. Handler never seemed to care if she had only hand-me-downs. All she wanted was a book. A bookworm she was. She would stop off at the cattle barn on the way home from school and crawl up in the loft and cover up with the hay and read until supper time. It gets dark. One night, Papa come home and it was dusk, and he went up to throw down some hay to the cattle, and he almost stuck the pitchfork in her, not knowing she was up there. She read everything she could get her hands on and remembered everything she read. People like that are just plain brilliant, and she was brilliant in books. My mother wasn't very well after Kathleen was born, and I had to put her on the bottle part-time anyway, so I felt more than ever that I could take all the care of her. The summer passed and school started. This was the term of 1914-15. In our neighborhood was an older teacher who took care of her aged parents, and she decided to teach high school for the neighborhood children. And Bernadette was ready for high school. This lady was Miss Myrna Dawson. And so Bernadette went to school to her. She also went to North Fork School, which is another country school where Mr. and Mrs. Real taught high school. Then she went to St. Mary's Academy at Quincy, Illinois for a year or so. The nuns taught there. It may have been the year 1914 when she started. I got an advancement from riding behind the saddle to getting in the saddle on the horse. I was 12 and Ann Lou 10, Rosalie 8. Della was 6, but she started her first year of school in Monroe City. She went to Holy Rosary and stayed with Aunt Amanda Jarbo and Aunt Agnes Reed. She went there several years. So an old bird was me in the saddle, Ann Lou and Rosalie. When we didn't ride old bird, we walked two miles plus through good weather and bad. In the fall of 1915, I went back to Kansas for the term of 1915-1916 and stayed with Aunt Nora and Uncle Bernard again. I was 13-14 this term, and a better age to go than when I went in 1910-11, when I was only 10, 1912 and 13, when I was only 10 and 11. The first term, I went to St. Francis School. The Loretta sisters were there. I call the Sisters of Loretta. They had been there a long time, but left St. Paul when someone shot Mr. Bill O'Brien, who was bucking the Board of Trade. Mr. O'Brien was a rich man in St. Paul who had a very big house and 12 children. He went fast every morning, and I was so fascinated at the jingle of the silver dollar he dropped in the contribution basket each Sunday. Most people put in a dime, By the way, Mr. Bill O'Brien was one of my mother's beaus before she came to Missouri. His daughters, Alice and Ruth, were my age. Alice taught me how to get rouge on my cheeks by wetting a red crepe paper and dabbing it on. Ruth became a nun. She was very sweet, and she never fooled with the rouge. There was a little girl named Grace, that was her mother's name, and the rest were boys. Billy, I was sort of struck on. Then came 1916, 17. Josephine was born on